Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Score! Alex Ovechkin still going strong, overpowering at 600. Score! Backstrom has tied it. Connolly fires. Rebound doorstep. It's in!
Save made by Braden Holtby. Oh, my! As Alex Tuck was robbed, the Washington Capitals are the 2018 Stanley Cup champions.
For the first time ever on the Capitals Talk podcast, I get to say this podcast is being recorded in front of a live studio audience. Yeah. We are at Penn Commons in D.C., right next to Capital One Arena. I am joined by J.J. Regan.
Woo!
Yeah, for J.J. Regan. I'm joined by our show producer, our Capitals pre- and post-game shows. Ryan Billy is in the house.
Our dog.
There it is, our dog. Perhaps you know this guy right here
No.
to my left.
No.
The voice of the Washington Capitals, the one and only
street merchant,
Joe B. in the house. So, Joe B., here's the easy softball question for you to get started.
Thank you.
Can the Caps repeat as Stanley Cup champs?
Not a problem. Piece of cake. Easy. The real answer to that is yes, but the cool thing is, having remembered what they've gone through, both physically and mentally, having been behind the scenes to watch how draining that was over 8 months, you have to tip your cap to anybody who's able to do it. And I realize there's a team in Western Pennsylvania that did it that we don't like to often tip our caps to, but they did achieve it. And they were trying to do something that the Islanders hadn't done since the 80s, didn't get it done. The Red Wings did it in the late 90s. For the Caps to do it again would be an amazing chore, and it would take a lot, but I think they're talented enough. I know they're talented enough to do it.
Well, we were just talking before, this team was built for the last, 8 years to be a Stanley Cup champ. So, JJ, you look at this team and you say, well, they could have and should have won cups before. Absolutely, this team is still built. The only thing that was stopping them from winning a cup was Pittsburgh. So now that they finally figured out how to get past that, I look at this team and I say, they can win a Stanley Cup again. In fact, they can probably do it a couple of more times over the next few years. It's tough, but certainly they've got the team to do it.
Yeah, last year we looked at their team and said, okay, the window is closed. And then they returned pretty much the exact same roster. And it's so hard to get that championship formula exactly right. They got it right last year, so it makes perfect sense that they'd want to return that entire team. I know they're missing Philip Grubauer and Jay Beagle, but if your biggest challenge going into a season is losing your fourth line center and your backup goalie, you're in pretty good shape. I think a lot of teams would trade positions with the Cavs.
I'm just glad we're talking about repeating. I'm tired of talking about whether or not they're going to get over the Penguins hump or... Nah, let's talk about repeating for the next 6 months.
Yes, I'm all for that. To quote TJ Oshie, and I think you were only a few feet away from him on the stage when he said it, back to back.
Yeah.
Back to back. Yeah, I mean, how great is the thought of the Caps doing it? Like, we were joking before, I'm not making any vacation plans until July.
TJ's not fooling around when he said it either. He means it, and the entire team does, and I will forever remember TJ being on the ice with Shane Gersich. There was a little North Dakota camaraderie going on there, and TJ's whispered in Shane's ear, we're going to do this again. In other words, give you a chance, Shane Gersich, to be on the ice with us as a player, not just as a black ace, a member of the Mushroom Club, and they mean it. And I understand why they feel that way, and I definitely believe that this is a burden that's been lifted off of them. They know that they can do it. And when you guys talk about the way they've been constructed, you could easily say they could have, would have, should have, in 9, 10, 16, 17, 18. They got the one done in 18. But to me, any of those other four could have gone their way, and I still think they're good enough, like you said, to do it maybe once, maybe twice more.
That sounds nice. That would be nice. Yeah, absolutely. So throughout the podcast, first off, a little behind the scenes. In TV, when we're trying to get some video, we're trying to get an interview, we say we're efforting.
Efforting.
Efforting is the word in TV parlance. Alan May is efforting to get here right now. So as soon as Alan May makes his way in, someone's getting bumped off this table. It's not me.
Joe B.
So, yeah, it could be Joe B. It could be Joe B.
It's going to be me.
Someone's getting bumped.
What happened to the survivor? I'm not. I lose quickly?
Maybe we have to come up with a game somehow and see who the survivor is. So when Alan May gets here, plus, we're also going to raffle off a signed Alex Ovechkin jersey. Later on, I know everyone here that made their way in is signed up
for
that. Yeah, so originally, Ryan told me that he wasn't sure that Ovi was the one who signed it, so Ryan would sign it just in case. But as it turns out, Ovi actually signed
it. Never mind.
So you can stand down for right now. So later we'll announce the winner of the signed Alex Ovechkin jersey. Plus, at some point, we'll get some of you involved. If you have any questions for any of us, we'll let you get up here. We'll definitely bump someone, probably Ryan also, to get some fans involved too. But the big story right now as we sit and record this on Monday evening, 2 days away from the home opener, is the fact that Tom Wilson more than likely is not going to be dressed in uniform for that game for the hit the other day in the St. Louis game. And for some reason, the Blues and preseason games have been a thing for Tom Wilson. But JJ, we'll start with you and go down the line. What'd you think of the whole play and what's going to happen next?
Okay, so I understand that it is a hockey play. The guy is cutting into the middle in the defensive zone. You got to keep your head up. The fact is, Tom Wilson's been suspended 3 times last season. You lose the benefit of the doubt at some point. And I get the argument that, okay, what is he supposed to do? But, I mean, let's look at the NFL. It makes sense when they say, what is he supposed to do, when you're seeing roughing the passer penalties from multiple different players in multiple different games every single week. Tom Wilson seems to be the only guy who can't stay out of trouble. He's the only guy who's getting suspended 3 times in a calendar year. So the what is he supposed to do argument, I don't think it really holds water. I know a lot of people are saying that the principal point of contact wasn't the head. I saw Sundqvist after the game. He had a gigantic welt under his eye. I'm sorry, it was the head. This is going to be a significant, significant suspension for Tom Wilson.
I'm not going to argue with you on that. My fear is that the NHL is going to try to once and for all hammer its point home. I think that the Department of Player Safety is going to sit there and say, Tom, you don't seem to have our message yet, so maybe this amount of suspension will get you to realize that we can't continue to have these meetings. We're meeting way too often. I mean, he's seeing George Parros far too often. There have been so many times in the last couple of years where I'm sure Craig Lachlan, Al Kokin, Alan May, all of us, any of us who have a microphone attached, will sit there and defend Tom Wilson as not, underline, not a dirty player. Yesterday's hit was not a dirty play in that it was not a forearm, it was not an elbow. He didn't jump out of the gym to hit him. He's in good defensive position. Things are happening very quickly. It's not a late hit if you see it. The puck is being shot by Sundqvist right at the point of contact where Wilson buries him. The question is, Tom, do you have to run him there? JJ's point is, what is he supposed to do? What else can he do? The league wants him to minimize or avoid the hit. He'll avoid it if they give him the amount of suspension that I fear they're going to give him.
I'm eating an onion ring, so Ryan, you want to go?
No, why don't you go, Rob? No, eating my onion ring.
I want to hear from Rob.
Yeah, really.
Did you order those?
Yes, that was my onion ring.
I thought they put it down on the table.
Yeah, that's my onion ring. All of those are mine.
Oh, sorry.
I thought Steve delicious. Was just trying to torture us, but yeah. That's okay.
Are those my meatballs?
They can be.
Yeah.
There you go.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
You know, I'm just disappointed that he's not going to be able to play most likely on Wednesday. I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a sour note for what's going to be an unbelievable night. You know, it's, you know, it, I'm disappointed. I think the NHL is going to hammer them, and maybe rightfully so, maybe not. It's hard to say. To Joe's point, I don't think it was a dirty play, but I think overall it's just going to be a tough thing on that night because we all wanted to see him out there.
Right, for the person, for the guy, for the kid who grew up dreaming about winning a Stanley Cup and being on the ice to watch that banner get raised, Joe, I'm just disappointed for him because this is self-inflicted. He did this to himself. He has said so many times, and JJ and I recorded a podcast after the game yesterday, which we had no intention of having to record a podcast after the final preseason game on a Sunday afternoon in which we were already missing all the NFL games. But then this happens, and, you know, it's one of those things where he wants to be out there, and he has said over and over, I understand that people are watching me. I understand that I'm now a marked guy, and I understand that I still have to be physical, but I do have to change my game a little bit, but yet he's not doing it on the ice. And that's a little frustrating, and ultimately I just feel bad for him that he won't be able to be on the ice with his teammates for this amazing moment that I know a couple of guys here said they cried when they won the Stanley Cup. There are going to be people crying when they watch that banner get raised, and you want him to be a part of that.
Without a doubt, without a question, and Tom, those of us up here who have the headphones on right now, we're lucky enough that we know Tom. We talk with Tom. We have the chance to visit with him, sit with him, listen to him explain himself. And I understand that the hearing will be on Wednesday morning. And Tom is proficient with these now. He's had a number of opportunities to sit in front of the Department of Player Safety and explain himself. And he'll do so very eloquently. And you'll listen to him and you'll be sitting there going, my gosh, he's so believable. And you'll want to understand that things happen quickly, both in his world and for everybody else in the NHL. But why does it keep happening along the boards? Why does it keep happening in open ice where he keeps finding himself in collisions that are landing people on the ice with their heads and minds and brains scrambled? He's got to do something different. Without minimizing his own effectiveness, he's got to do something different to avoid these situations. And I fear that the league is going to not just slap him on the wrist this time. I think this is going to be a substantial suspension.
The line's at 5.5.
And
I'm putting the line at 5.5.
Easily over.
Over.
Oof. And,
over.
And with his new contract, it's a handsome sum of money that he's going to be squandering as a result. And it has to get through to him. And trust me, I've known him since he was an 18-year-old. I've spoken with him often about this topic. I think the world of him. He's a fabulous person. He is, again, not a dirty player, but he has to avoid these circumstances some way, somehow.
Well, JJ and I talked about this, Ryan, and the fact is that 99% of the players in the league have figured out not to take that hit, and he just hasn't yet. So you hope, because he's now too important.
Yeah.
This isn't a goon that's going out there to protect your guy. If someone took a run at Jacob Vrana and put him down, all right, you're going to have to answer to 43. But he's now a top-line right wing who just signed a monster contract, who's also your top-pair penalty kill. So, like, he has to realize, like, I'm a pretty important dude on this team, and it's not just hurting me, it's going to hurt my teammates, too.
And suspensions have a way of sort of proving that point. So if it is a lengthy suspension, I think he will see that, he's not just a fourth-line guy. He's not just somebody who can muck and grind as he was at some points in his career. He's somebody who's relied upon, and especially on the PK, like you mentioned, it's going to be not a problem, but it's a thing.
But guys, I can't have him be petrified to throw a hit.
No,
he's
I agree.
Tom Wilson.
I agree.
He hits, right. But I have a feeling every time he's about to have any sort of physical contact with a player, he's going to start pulling up now, and that's going to impact his effectiveness.
What should he have done in that situation yesterday? If that comes up, so hypothetically he gets 8 games. Game 9, he comes back, and there's a guy with his head down crossing through the middle of the ice. What does Tom Wilson do?
The only thing he can do there to avoid that kind of contact and collision, and again, it's happening fast, is just concentrate on defensive positioning, stick on puck. You hear Alan explain it. You hear Todd Reardon explain it all the time. He's got to go for a stick check there. That makes him the anti-Tom Wilson. Part of the reason he's become Tom Wilson is because he is a ferocious and clean body checker. In that instance, with a player coming across, you know what it reminded me of? And I mentioned this to the TKM line that I was speaking. This was a Scott Stevens hit.
Wait. What's the TKM line you're talking about? These girls right here? Okay, we got a line here. Who's the center on that line?
Definitely Alex Ovechkin there in the eighth.
Okay. So it's lined up there. Okay, just wondering.
It was a Scott Stevens hit back in the day. And it was a Scott Stevens hit that would put people to sleep. But the league demands that that hit be out of the game now. And that's the one that Tom can't make. So he's got to do whatever he can. He either has to turn away, which is going to get him in trouble with his coach because, you know, you were in good defensive position. Why'd you turn away? Or he's got to make a solid stick check. He can't shrink. He can't become me all of a sudden and try and hit the guy shoulder to chest. He is 6'6" on skates. Tough. It's a tough position to be in.
If anyone has a question or anything that wants to get involved, please just, yeah, you want to get Greg? You want to come up here and get involved with us? This is, I mean, you're practically part of the game broadcast anyway. JJ, can we move his mic over there to get him? There we go. Very simple. Just say your name so that way anyone listening to it, hey, don't break the stuff.
Easy.
He can't walk away.
Easy.
Yeah, as I've thought about this, I've considered it kind of like Top Gun, where at the beginning of the movie, Maverick is...
I love that movie.
Me too. Maverick feels the need for speed, but at the end of the movie, he's still kind of... I think Iceman says he's still dangerous, but he's under control. And that's the transition that Tom, or the maturity that Tom needs to show and grow into, but he hasn't yet. And so the question, I guess, is, do you see him making that transition? Is that going to happen?
I think that's Ryan's point. So hypothetically, again, we're throwing out hypotheticals here. Let's just say he gets 10 games, right? The next one, if there's a next one, you're hypothetically looking at 20 games. Now you're looking at 30 games of the season. That's when he's going to start to realize, I can't do this anymore. And that's maybe the only way a guy like that. And again, we all like Tom Wilson. We all think he's a fabulous player and really an even better person. But it's going to take a hard lesson for him to realize, I can't do this to me or my team.
Can we all talk about what a great metaphor that was, by the way?
Oh, really? And he brought it full circle.
Anytime he brought
Top
Gun. Yeah. That was awesome.
And he's still dangerous. I mean, you're quoting now. That's a good job.
Yeah, that was a good job. Just as long as we don't end up like Goose.
Where's Voodoo? Where's Voodoo?
Wait, am I getting I'm getting breaking news. Do we have a breaking?
Do we have a
breaking news? Do 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 do. Alan May is in the building, everyone. Yes. So, Billy, you could take your onion rings and scram.
You know what I learned? There's no delicate way to eat onion rings in front of a room full of people. So this is good for me.
Take your onion rings and beat it. Alan's going to get his drink order
in. He's
going
to socialize.
Right, he's going to socialize. He'll make his way over here. But yeah, I mean, I think we could just put it to bed is that he's going to have to be smarter. JJ, when he comes back from whatever this suspension is, he's going to have to become a smarter player on the ice.
I mean, remember the impact he had when he was missing in those three games in the playoffs. They looked like a completely different team without him. I know everybody labels him as this goon. He's a top-line winger, and it was evident when he was missing from the lineup. So he's going to have to be smart, not just for him, but because it really affects the team when he's out. It affects that top line. They've got something good going with that top line with Ovechkin and Kuznetsov. They can't afford to have Wilson out of the lineup for 10 games at a time.
Can we get a little Alan May chant going? A little Alan May.
Alan May.
Alan May.
Alan May.
All I hear is you guys, no audience.
Thank you.
We love so it's like a normal night for you, Alan.
it'll be, okay, we'll see you on F Street in a couple days.
All right, Alan, we haven't seen you. You've taken the time off this summer. Tell us about your summer of, this is your team. More than any of us, this is your team. It's in your blood. Tell us about your summer of being a part of a championship organization.
Well, I didn't have to argue with anyone this year. Backstabbing Obi and Backy and John Carlson and Braden Holtby. So it was a kind of a summer where there was no conflict in my life. So, you know, I didn't have to win any arguments, and I think I won the ultimate argument now that Obi goes down as one of the best captains in modern-day history of the National Hockey League, and Nick Backstrom proved that he's an incredible all-round hockey player. You look at all the other players. Braden Holtby came in as the backup to start the playoffs and end up being the best goaltender in the playoffs. No matter how much they talked about all those other goaltenders, Braden Holtby beat every guy in the playoffs. Bobrovsky, you go Matt Murray, he takes out Tampa Bay.
Vasilevsky.
And then Marc-Andre Fleury. He finally gets the best of him. And the Caps get a Stanley Cup. I saw their names on the cup just a little bit ago. I can't wait to see the ring. And so my summer was absolutely 100% utterly amazing.
Yeah, everyone here that I talked to, I said, how was your summer? They're like, it was the best summer of my life. It was the best. And
I think my summer was better because I live in Texas and I didn't have to deal with all the rain.
That, yes, you are lucky. You're certainly lucky in that behalf. But your thoughts on, we just spent a long time on Tom Wilson, your thoughts on the hit, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say.
Well, we know he's going to be suspended on Wednesday night. It's not guaranteed, but if he has a hearing on Wednesday in New York or Toronto, I'm not sure where it's at, you have to bet that he's suspended for that. When I played, the game was a lot different. You would make that hit. You'd be patted on the back for it. The player who took the hit would be probably, his coaches and staff would be pretty upset with him, his teammates for dropping his head, cutting through the middle. But, you know, Tom's like the number one villain in the National Hockey League now. So, you know, the outcry on Twitter, all the social media that you look at is 100% against him. But, you know, it's a shame he won't be able to start the season.
Yeah, it is. It's unfortunate for him. Again, we're live here. Our first ever live Capitals Talk podcast. And thank you to everyone who came out today. We've got one fan who came all the way from Finland, right? From Finland for the opening game. Big Caps fan that came here for opening night, which is pretty awesome. I know he already signed up to win the Alex Ovechkin jersey. We're going to do more of this throughout the year. So thank you guys for coming out here to Penn Commons tonight and being a part of our first ever live Capitals Talk podcast. So, Joe B., as you get ready for the start of the season, and Wednesday night's game is on NBCSN.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's the national game. The Stanley Cup champs are always going to be in the national game. But then Thursday night, back at it at Pittsburgh.
Do I get that one?
You're allowed to call that one.
Thank you.
Your most intriguing plot lines other than them defending the cup, what's got you most interested in this team?
I want to see where Jacob Vrana and Andrei Burakovsky go, because we were talking about the Caps having the ability to win another one, maybe more than one. And if that's going to happen, folks, you know, Father Time's undefeated. Alex and Nicholas look tremendous. They look like they are fit as a fiddle coming into this season, but time is adding up, and you need the younger players to live up to their full potential. And if Jacob Vrana and Andrei Burakovsky can do that, if they were to both somehow develop into 20, 25 goal scorers, now you're talking about a team that has a glut of offensive weapons that would be fantastic. JJ mentioned that the team lost Jay Beagle and Philip Grubauer, and we could make an argument that those two are very, very important pieces, especially with the way Grubauer performed last year while Braden's game went sideways for a while. But to me, how the team progresses, how the team faces the first, I think, month and a half, because they're so far away from the next playoff opportunity. Will they play themselves as a top team in the division, a top team in the conference, or will they lollygag around and then try to sprint towards the playoffs at the end? To me, I think the team comes in with a great frame of mind and firmly believes in that back-to-back mantra. They want to prove people that they can do that. I wouldn't be surprised if they kick butt and take names early, but that schedule in the first couple of weeks, 3 weeks to a month, is very challenging.
So, Alan, I know, you know, there's a lot of people that say, how do you find that hunger again? And you always said, winning is an addiction. It's a drug, and once it gets in your blood, it's impossible to not chase that high. And I talked to a lot of guys about that during camp, and Matt Niskanen said it the best, I thought. He said, once you taste that, it's a burning in your belly. You love that feeling of winning so much that you want it to happen again. And I really honestly believe, and JJ and I touched on this yesterday in our podcast, these guys want to do this again. There's no feeling of like, hey, we got over the hump, we've accomplished this, it's great, we'll see what happens this year. This is still a pretty determined bunch that's now learned how to win.
Well, they know that beer tastes better when you win. And everything else that they do.
Out of the cup, yes.
But the big thing with this is that they'll all want to do well. They will all say that. But the biggest thing that'll have to happen with this group of players is the leadership group is going to have to hold everyone to a higher standard this year than they held them last year. So practices, team meetings, how they travel on the road, the professionalism paying attention in meetings, that stuff is going to matter now more than ever, because you can let complacency sneak in. And with everyone not just gunning for Alex Ovechkin because you're playing the Grade 8 every night, they are now playing the Stanley Cup, defending Stanley Cup champions. So you're going to have your A game like you've never had it before. Players will hit you harder, skate faster. It'll just be that much more intense. But it's up to the leadership group to kick some ass.
Don't you get the sense, though, that they're ready for it?
I think that's why it was hugely important to get number 44 back. Brooks Orpik may mean more to this team off the ice than he does on it. And that's saying a lot, because I think from a physical standpoint, he is the guy who brings the hammer in the defensive zone, has always been that. But more importantly, it's the things that I see him do off the ice, that I hear about him doing in meeting rooms, that I hear about the discussions he has with the younger players. If you're wanting and seeing and hoping that the Caps maintain that professionalism, a lot of it, when Alan talks about a leadership group or a council, it's not just the guys who wear the A's and C's on their sweater. Those guys are vitally important. Please don't get me wrong. But all the way through, a player like Brooks Orpik, with all the seasoning that he has, with all the experience that he has, he's vitally important to how this team maintains its day-to-day regimen. He does it really well.
Former Colorado Avalanche defenseman, yes. Brooks Orpik.
Yes.
Of course.
For what, for like 40 hours or so?
Something like that.
Yeah. But what a stroke of brilliance, though, by Brian McClellan. I still don't know how he did that.
What a brilliant move that was. To somehow trade away, first of all, I never thought he'd be able to trade away that cap hit in the first place. And then not only to trade away that cap hit, but to keep the player, that is a stroke of genius. So good on him for doing that. But Brooks Orpik is going to have a different role this year, and don't ask him about that because he hates talking about it.
I would imagine so.
He does not like talking about that, but he's going to have a different role this year. I see him as a 60 to 65 game player this year. I don't think he's going to be an everyday player. I think he turns more into a locker room leader than a guy on the ice, because I hesitate to say that 38 is old, considering that I'm 31. I'm not that far away, but it's clear that he's a little bit slower than he used to be, and I'm just curious as to what his role on the team is going to be this year.
So once again, I go back to betting lines, because clearly I'm sort of a degenerate, but if I put the line at 65 and 65, a little bit, like a slight degenerate. I don't mind putting a wager down. If I put the line at 65 and a half for Brooks Orpik, Joe, are you going over or under?
That silly hook that you just put on it makes everything different. You are like Vegas.
That's what Vegas does.
That's how they get Vegas.
You, yes.
I think you guys have... Well, then I'd have to go under because of the hook. I think 65 is right, and I wish the best for Brooks from a health standpoint. I haven't fully discussed it with Todd and with Reed yet about how they envision Brooks being involved. But to me, again, I keep coming back to his value... off the ice, as a captain, alternate captain, associate coach, player coach, he does all of those things. He does them very, very well. He's an important piece to this puzzle.
Alan, 65 and a half with the hook, over or under? I'm going to say over, because like JJ was alluding to, Brooks Orpik is going to fight to be in the lineup every night.
Well, he was upset last year with the ice time he received. So you know what? How much could he have slowed down over the offseason when he probably works out harder than anyone?
And he was at his best in May and June.
He is what he is. And he's a defensive defenseman that's phenomenal on the penalty kill, who's great at protecting the front of the net, and he's an incredible leader. And that's what the team brought him back for. That's what he was originally brought here for. I expect the same game out of him. The fancy stats, people won't love him. But all I know is in the last 6.5, 7 minutes of Game 5 in Las Vegas, there was only one defenseman I wanted on the ice every second of the play, and it was a guy that got hit with about 10 pucks, Brooks Orpik.
It's also the guy who scored the game winner
for the
first ever Capitals Stanley Cup final win. So, go figure.
It's a heck of a trivia question.
Yeah, who would have ever predicted on a team, right, a great trivia question, on a team with Alex Ovechkin and TJ Oshie and Nicholas Backstrom, that it'll go down in history that Brooks Orpik is the guy that scored the very first ever Caps Stanley Cup game-winning goal. So if anyone else has a question or anything that wants to get involved in the podcast, feel free to just walk up. We'll give you a microphone and get involved. I also want to bring a couple of you up here. If anyone wants to come and share your stories, because I was talking with a couple of you beforehand of what the run was like for you guys. As fans watching it, whether you were in the streets when the streets were closed down. I know a couple of you are in Florida, but lifelong Caps fans. So if anyone wants to come up, share your story with us, feel free. Just walk up here, and we'll get you involved. Because we just keep saying, it's almost surreal that this happened. Like, the Caps are the Stanley Cup champs. They went through
has a lovely
gauntlet
ring to it.
Of teams to get there. And sometimes I'll relive something in my head and go, I can't believe they actually pulled this off.
And one of the lead guys you emulated in the Pittsburgh series after he scored a phenomenally huge goal. Everybody who a lot of people who've approached me in the summer wanting to talk about the Caps run and whether or not they can repeat. It usually starts with a Yevgeny Kuznetsov discussion. And I just know that Backstrom and Ovechkin and Holtby have been here longer than Yevgeny, but his role is obvious in that he's the one who's going to be the guy flying the cape the farthest for the longest time now and at the highest level. I just think with him, he feels as if he still has that much more to prove. And if so, we are in for something that's phenomenal because from a playmaking standpoint, from a showman standpoint, he's first rate.
You know what I love, Alan, too, is they're now experimenting with putting Kuzi on the penalty kill. And I was covering the Islanders for MSG Network when they put Michael Grabner on the penalty kill. And his instincts and speed, I mean, that dude had two breakaways every single game. He didn't score on a lot of them, but he had two breakaways every single game. If Kuzi, and I was talking to someone in the organization, if Kuzi can be that kind of person on the PK, he could end up scoring 6 or 7 shorthanded goals this year just on his instincts and his skill.
Well, he may be able to do that, but I don't want him on the penalty kill.
I don't want him blocking shots.
And Joe just stole my line.
Sorry, bud.
That's all right. But I don't want him blocking shots, and that's one of the things you have to do in the penalty kill. You look at Nick Backstrom when he was injured in the playoffs when he broke his finger. It was on a penalty kill. And you just don't want to have that. You need to keep your top guys healthy. You can't have them all doing double duty. He gets enough time on the power play. You need to make sure that you're getting these young players on the penalty kill and the role players, the guys that aren't on the power play. You got to spread that ice time around. And that was the key to this team's success last year in the playoffs was everyone pretty much had a role. And they had a 5-on-5 role, and they had a 5-on-4 or a 4-on-5 role. And that's important that you get everyone involved because you have to go the distance.
So we've all been a part of the preseason games in one way, shape, or form. You're coming in now. I want to get your thoughts, Alan, on a couple of the guys who, to me, have all done something. It's kind of like the playoff run. All these new guys have done something.
Yes.
Like, in the playoffs, everyone did something important to help the cause along the way. I want to get your thoughts on what looks like it's going to be the starting fourth-line center, Nick Dowd, who did a heck of a job in the finale getting a goal for himself. It's always important to chip in, but looks like someone who feels comfortable on that fourth line.
Well, you look at the pedigree that he's had in the LA Kings organization, and they do a very good job of developing their American Hockey League players. He's got a full season there. He understands the role. He played for one of the grumpiest coaches ever in Daryl Sutter, and if you want to learn how to play well defensively, you play for a miserable coach. And, you know, Daryl's a winner, and he's kind of miserable, and I think he drove the point home that you have to be great at the intangibles of finding a way to be relevant on a team. And I think Nick Dowd, well, I'm not sure how he is in the faceoff circle. Time will tell. But it's a great opportunity for him. And, you know, Travis Boyd's injury is a blessing in disguise for Nick Dowd at this point.
Nick Dowd steps in, and he's instantly the best faceoff guy on the team already. He played okay in the preseason in the faceoff circle, but I think he's already established himself as the top guy there. What I really liked about him is that he seemed to find instant chemistry on that fourth line. Instant chemistry with Devontae Smith-Pelly and Chandler Stephenson when they were playing together. And he looked really good on the penalty kill. So I think he steps in well for Jay Beagle on the ice. Off the ice, there's no way you can replace a guy like Jay Beagle. But he does fit in well with the team, and he fits that role really well.
Rob, we addressed this yesterday in Caps Extra after the win over the Blues. For me, what always stands out in the games that I've watched play back from the preseason with Dowd as a Cap fourth line center, he's in the right spot at the right time, and he seems to have adapted to the scheme for the Caps very, very quickly. So he must have a really good head on his shoulders. He's understood what's been asked of him, and he's operated in a way that just makes it look like it's going to be a seamless transition for him. JJ's point about meshing with Stevenson and Smith-Pelly was perfectly on example yesterday, especially in the second period when they had a great scoring chance where Dowd makes a nice play off the boards. I just think he's a heady kind of hockey player who will be exactly what Todd Reirden and Scott Arneil can work well with.
And from the hockey hotbed of Huntsville, of Alabama. Yeah, and that he's an Auburn fan. And I asked him yesterday, you got to choose one when you grow up in Alabama. I said, Roll Tide or War Eagle? He said, War Eagle, baby.
War Eagle.
Yeah, so he's an Auburn fan. Yeah, unfortunately, it would have been a lot easier to be an Alabama fan. Yeah. But he's an Auburn fan. Jason Megna, Alan. Here's another guy who comes in. And again, I was talking with someone yesterday that said, very impressed. But pleasantly surprised with how well Megna seemed to fit in. He got a goal on Friday night in the game. And I think the plan is to keep him around. And he's sort of the if-needed guy. You know, they'll break the glass and bring him in.
Yeah, well, the biggest thing with all these players is, you know, when they're older and they've been having a tough time making it, you know, skating is one of the issues, positionally sound that he is. But I think Nick Dowd is above him right now. I think the best player of the group is actually Travis Boyd, but he's injured and he can't help himself right now. I just think he's got a better head on his shoulders than all the other mentioned players, but he's not here to defend himself right now. So you look at Dowd is there, and then at some point, they're not just going to throw in guys. They're going to go with their roster. They're not going to try to platoon players. They want the players in playing their best every night. They want to have lines. When they're not playing well, they mix the lines up. But the biggest thing is they want to establish who their team is, and just like they did last season.
You know what I liked about Megna was that every time he was on the penalty kill, he made a play. Now, Todd Reirden wants to be more aggressive this year on the penalty kill. Megna really fits that really well. He had how many breakaways on the PK in the preseason? I mean, you don't want to risk a guy like Evgeny Kuznetsov on a penalty kill. Megna's a guy, you know, let's be real. You can survive an injury to Jason Megna a lot easier than you can to Evgeny Kuznetsov.
Yes, but, I agree.
But he can bring that aggressiveness on the PK and give some time for Evgeny Kuznetsov to be on the bench. I really like the way he looked on the penalty kill, for sure.
There's a past connection between Megna and Reirden. They've spent some time together in another organization whose name shall not be mentioned. And there's a likability with the way Jason plays. And I see a spark there that I know that the coaches will like if needed. I do agree with what Alan was mentioning, though. Travis Boyd looked and appeared to be ready to earn a spot, whether it be as the fourth line center or on the taxi squad. And again, this keeps coming back to the same critical discussion that we started with respect to Tom Wilson. If it's a major league size suspension, they're going to have to carry extra forwards, and that may impact who it is that they wanted to keep from the defensive side. I'm curious to see how all this plays out. Obviously, I'm hoping there's some leniency shown on Wednesday, but I don't expect there to be.
Right, that's the throwing a pebble into a pond and there's going to be a ripple effect.
I don't expect them to be that lenient.
Right, so does that mean good things or bad things for Jonas Siegenthaler?
I would imagine, since it's harder to send Bowie down, that could be bad for Jonas.
Right, because he doesn't have to clear through waivers.
Correct.
So that's an unfortunate ripple effect.
Whereas if you had Tom, you may have only carried the single extra forward and the two extra D. Again, they have decisions to make, and a lot of it comes down to finances. A lot of it comes down to passing or having to go through waivers. There are a number of things that are on the table there. But, yeah, it could impact a defenseman like Jonas the wrong way. And I know Locker's been very impressed with what he's seen from 34 so far.
Yeah, the other night when he got a chance to play with John Carlson, I thought he acclimated himself very well.
Really?
I mean,
well.
I thought that was a game where, all right, kid, let's see what you do. And every time he stepped on the ice, and I was working in the Smoke and Al role, I was, you know, rinkside. So I'm right there, and I just kept my eyes on Siegenthaler the whole time. I don't know how much you got to watch of the game, Alan, but I watched him. Maybe once or twice I felt like, and I don't know because I'm not watching the game like you do, but once or twice I thought, is he putting himself or Carlson in a bad position? But other than that, good stick work, didn't let guys get in front, you know, in between him and the net. I just thought he really did a nice job of getting the puck out of his own zone, which is so important, and just playing good, stout defense.
Well, I think the biggest thing that you can't really take too much of the preseason into consideration, and not to knock anybody, but it's almost like the veterans are trying not to get hurt while they're out there. and then the young guys are going as hard as they can, but sometimes you don't have cooperation with who's on your line or who your defense partner is because they're playing one style, you're another. But I don't think anyone looked horrible in any of the games. I don't think anyone really stole the show in any of the games. I just think that no one looked really out of place. But the biggest thing is, you know, getting time and getting confidence, whereas last year Siegenthaler and players like that, when they were getting in, you really didn't notice much. But now they're looking a lot, you know, it's called a cup of coffee. You give them a few cups of coffee so they want the entire pot at some point.
Albie, in general, if you were to try and put a partner together with a player who plays like John Carlson, would his D pair be a physical guy like Siegenthaler or another puck mover like Juice?
I would want a puck mover,
okay,
because we've seen that work best, not a puck carrier, but a guy that's passing the puck, that's zipping it up the ice, because you look at the two players that have done best with John the last few years, it's not Dmitry Orlov, who likes to rag the puck. It's been Kempney, who's been incredible, all world with him. And Christian Juice did a really good job last year. But the defensive style, the defensive type of defenseman doesn't necessarily mesh well, I think, for John to be as productive as he was last year.
Yeah, all of us are hoping it won't be too much longer for Michael. That's a tough injury.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that because you kind of forget about it. We're talking about Siegenthaler or Juice, who is with Carlson, but Kempney became a really important part of this team. So we're hoping he's ready to go because, you know, like Alan kept saying last year, Carlson's game went next level when Kempney got there. As good as he was playing early when he was logging those big minutes, he went next level once he felt comfortable that Kempney was behind him.
Reardon's words were exactly when they started to pair those two up, that Kempney allowed John to be John and gave him the freedom to do that, and obviously John's game's blossomed since. I can only say, and you never know with the type of injury that Michael has, the fact that they originally spelt it out day-to-day to me and not week-to-week like Boyd, which they obviously felt was going to take some time, they haven't ruled Kempney out unless I'm misspoken.
No, still day-to-day.
I don't think they haven't ruled him out for Wednesday. I'd love to see him there. But if it's shorter term, that's terrific. But you never know with that type of injury how it's going to play out, how the player is going to feel from a day-to-day standpoint.
And you want him to be a part of it.
Yeah, you want him to be a part of it, especially because, I mean, that was the trade that saved the season.
No doubt.
Which is the craziest thing, because every single one of us was like, really?
Yeah. Who,
that's the move?
Michael Kempney?
The depth defenseman who couldn't crack the terrible Chicago lineup?
Who's Michael Kempney? A third-round draft pick? This is the guy who's going to plug into the top four? And he did, and it was, without hyperbole, the trade that saved the season. You cannot win without a dependable top four in the defense unless you're the Pittsburgh Penguins that one year. I still don't know how they won with that defense that they put on the ice. But that was the trade that saved the season. Michael Kempney really meshes well with John Carlson, and you would hate to see him miss the banner raising considering the role he played in getting the Caps that far.
So what's the update on the Ovi jersey? Are we going to give away the Ovi jersey? Do we know what the word is on the Ovi jersey? Are we going to do this now? When do you want to do this? We can give away the Ovi jersey now? Alan, you're drinking water. Is this the same Alan May? There's not a beer in front of you right now.
Oh, that's just water.
That's got a fruit in it?
Tonic water.
It's tonic. You're so healthy. Can the print be any smaller than this? You're dealing with a 46-year-old man. Luckily, it's an iPad, so I'll just zoom it open a little bit. My goodness. All right.
46.
So this is the winner right here? All right. This is the first name, last name right here?
One never knows.
All right. And if this person's not here, we go on to the next one. All right. So the winner of the signed Alex Ovechkin jersey that we have raised right here is...
The Great Eight.
Sam Mills. Sam Mills. We've got a winner.
Hey.
We got a winner. Come on up here. Come on up. We're going to give you a signed Alex Ovechkin jersey.
Watch out for those meatballs there, Rob.
There you go, a signed. Here, sit down. Sit down for a second, Sam. Sit down for a second. JJ, can you hand her a microphone? Wait, she's posing for pictures now. Yeah, like you're the big star of the show right now. This is it.
Nice play-by-play, Rob.
This is it. The star of the show. Have a seat here, Sam, real quick. Yeah, get involved. So you're one of the, I was mentioning earlier, you guys live down in Florida, right? But
yes.
You were eating, breathing, living the whole run. What was it like for you as a fan watching from Florida?
Oh, we wanted to be there. It was difficult to watch it from so far away, but so exciting.
When I know your husband said he's a lifelong Caps fan.
Right.
Was he crying? Let's call him out right. Tell me his name right now.
His name is Dwayne.
Dwayne, and was he crying? It's okay.
Like a baby.
Like a baby, he said. Dwayne, come on up here. Because he's the Caps fan, right? Did you grow up in the area?
Oh, I grew up in Ohio. My husband grew up in Vienna.
Okay, so Dwayne, sit a little closer to the microphone.
He's coming.
Like, this is grown. Like, look, I sent out a tweet with Alan and his kids the night they won it, and there were grown man tears in Alan's eyes, and he owned up to it. That was a great moment for him. Grown man tears for you, or were you crying like a little baby?
For sure. I was crying.
We got a spill from Joe B, who's just trying to help get the microphones. Just water.
He's a lifelong Caps fan. All of our dogs have been named after Capitals players. Everything about him is Capitals.
And they will be.
Right. So tell me, like, your earliest memories of the Caps. Like, what?
My first game, I was up in the old Cap Center.
Puck in the Raptors.
My brother was making me leave, and we left. And a puck went flying by my head and missed me by about a foot before the netting, of course. And I was hooked.
You were hooked. You were a Caps fan ever since. Yeah. Right.
I think Locker.
Locker was your guy?
Yeah, I think he shot it.
Oh, don't let him hear
Locker
that.
Oh, Locker shot it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Man, we could really mess with Locker now.
We
had a fan who you hit in the head.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I love that.
Your ear, he got it. Yeah,
I'll be
sure
to bring that up to him tomorrow when I see him.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely.
That puck wasn't by his ear, did him in.
Yeah, that was it. So tell me what it was like for you. So when did you know? Like, I've talked about this. So they're down 0-2 to Columbus. There was a lot of doubt there. They had to get past Pittsburgh. There was a lot of doubt there. Tampa's just a really good team. There was a lot of doubt there. I think it was game two of Vegas where I went, oh, they're better. They're going to win the Stanley Cup. This team's going to win the Stanley Cup. When did you know your team that you've been cheering for forever is going to win the Stanley Cup?
Game two. I was scared of Tampa. Tampa scared me with Stamkos. It was just, I think...
Game two
of Vegas.
Yes.
Joe B, for you too.
Game six of the Tampa series. At home, Washington wins 3-0 and plays
maybe
close
their best
to
game
a
ever.
Perfect game, the most physical game I think I've ever seen them play underneath that roof. Alex Ovechkin doesn't score a goal in that game, but he does everything else. Braden Holtby's performance was brilliant. Once they did what they did in game six of the Tampa series, I had complete confidence that they would go south and win game seven. And all year long, I never gave Vegas enough credit. I knew Washington was better. And I knew after game six that they were going to beat both Tampa and the Golden Knights.
Alan, for you, I interviewed Blaine Forsythe the other day. We picked like six of the biggest goals. Obviously, the Kuzi goal and the Eller goal in game three against Columbus. Obviously, the Eller goal that wins it, the DSP goal. It was six goals we picked out on the run. When did you know this team's going to do it?
April 1st in Pittsburgh. I said it that
night,
I think.
You do say it. Yep, you said it that night.
April 1st in Pittsburgh because they finally changed the style of play. Everyone was in on it. Grubauer was in net, but every single player, Obi and Kuznetsov, led the way that night with their positional play, and they were getting killed on Twitter for not chasing the puck all the time when they couldn't get to it, and instead of backing off and being responsible defensively. And that was the day the true leadership... really, everyone fell in line with Ovi, and they stayed to the system. But I really think that game, regardless of who scored in that game, Devontae Smith-Pelly set the tone for himself for the rest of the season that night. He had seven monstrous hits, but it was that game, April 1st, that sold me.
What did you guys think of Alan May as a player?
I loved him.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Just lay that softball up there for you.
He's my kind of player.
That's your kind of player, right there.
We're both hockey players, and we just love Alan May.
Oh, there you go. He loves hearing that.
Locker almost hit you with a puck. Mayday almost hit you with a punch.
Right. Well, that's a congrats to you on winning that signed Obi jersey. That's pretty awesome. And you guys are going to opening night. You're up here from Florida going to opening night. Have the best night
Enjoy.
Of your lives.
We're
Enjoy.
So excited to see the banner go up.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for coming out here.
Thank you.
Awesome. Alex Ovechkin signed your... So they came up from Florida. They got to talk with Alan and Joe B. They got a signed Ovi jersey, and they're going to opening night. I'd say that's a pretty successful trip.
Sounds like a win.
That sounds like a win all the way around. So, all right, Alan, I'll start with you. What do you anticipate Wednesday night being like when they raise that banner?
Lots of tears in the building. It's so emotional for so many people that don't have loved ones here that took them to their first Caps games, their best friends, their mom, their dad, their brother, their sister. whoever they went with back in the old dark days at the old US Air Arena. And I just think it's a lot of people suffered through a lot of years, and it's happened all around the National Hockey League, Buffalo, Vancouver. They've had their lean years and their tough years. But there's a lot of emotion that went into the playoffs last year. There's going to be, I expect, 60, 70, 80,000 people outside the building, which will be all world and amazing again. And I just think it'll be, you know, the parade was maybe the highlight of my hockey career. I think this Stanley Cup banner will be another amazing night.
JJ, I want to get from you next, and we touched on this in the podcast yesterday. As a kid that grew up, you know, dreaming about the Caps and your favorite team and idolizing all these players, I know we talked about it. You might cry up in that press box as a working journalist. You might cry.
Yeah, the rule in the press box is that there's no cheering in the press box. It doesn't say anything about crying. I'm going to be crying like a little girl. We have the greatest job in the world, but one of the things is about it, you rarely have time to sit there and appreciate something. You always have to think about the next thing. You always have to think about, you know, what do I have to do for this? They just scored a goal. What do I do next? That is going to be a moment where I can actually sit back and appreciate it, and I'm going to take it all in, and it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough. I'm going to be a little bit misty-eyed. I'm not going to lie.
Joe B., today we had a meeting, and they were talking about what's sort of the tenor of our goals for this year. If you had to pick, like, a celebrity that you know, we want to be like this person and tell the stories, like, this way, how are we going to do that this year? We were trying to think of, like, what's a fun, professional, but a little goofy? And we were like, who could it be? And we threw out a couple of actors and celebrities, and then someone said, I think we're basically the Jacob Rana and Joe B video from the celebration. I think that's basically what we want. We want to be the Rana Joe B video on Instagram, because that just captured everything.
Here is the man.
Score! Alexander Ovechkin.
Jacob Vrana.
Nicholas Backstrom.
Jacob Vrana.
So as you went through that and celebrated with them as the longtime voice of this team, what do you anticipate Wednesday night to be like?
Okay, I'm going to take a little moment to bring you back to Cafe Milano that night. I just want to make sure that I pull the curtain back on something that may have been, for me and for Craig that night, as memorable as any point of the entire run, honestly. And I think about Wednesday approaching, and I think about it personally and both professionally. And we're working in a capacity leading up and from a pregame standpoint on NBC Sports Washington. That'll be one focus. Personally, while I'm watching the banner being raised, I can't help but think about how I will feel with all the other Caps fans in the building and outside. I cannot tell you how impressed I was by the fan support while we were on the road in Tampa, or while we were on the road in Vegas, to actually see the pictures, the video that we were seeing of the fans in the streets, around the arena, in the arena, watching television. I was overcome with emotion by just the energy that the Caps fans were showing. That night, Locker and I and his family had dinner, not at Cafe Milano, but maybe 5 minutes away, and Courtney is shuffling through her social media. Hey, guys, the cup is at Cafe Milano. I'm like, well, we're 2 minutes away. Let's go. And unfortunately, we couldn't talk Locker's entire family upstairs with the team, but Locker and I went up there, and here's the
Wait. So Locker left his family downstairs, which took you?
He had to. Security.
You say that you totally get it. Okay, you're okay with that.
Security demanded it. But here's the reason I tell this story, and not many people know it. Locker and I think, are of the same belief. And if I asked Alan May, I'd be curious. I haven't even asked him since the team did win the cup. I've never, ever touched the Stanley Cup. Ever. Craig Lachlan, Alan May, they had the pleasure of competing for it. Locker and I are of the same opinion that, you know what, guys? The guys who win it, they deserve to touch it. They deserve to hold it overhead. There's got to be a little bit of separation between the players who played and won it and those of us who run our mouths on TV about it. That night, we get upstairs, and trust me, the team was feeling no pain. At the third floor, it was one of the few times where they were trying to spend a little private time with the Stanley Cup and their teammates. Locker and I get upstairs, and immediately, John Carlson looks at me and says, Joe, pick it up. John, no. This, I just wanted to shake all of your hands. It's the first time we had seen them since we had come back from Vegas. Joe, pick it up. No, John, really, congratulations, thank you. He insisted. Tom Wilson looks at me, goes, Joe, pick the up. And I said, no, really, I can't do that. I was so conflicted. But what I'm telling you is the team wanted to include us so much in that celebration. That was so heartfelt for me. I did pick it up for the first time. That I've been in the room with it so many times. I did hold it over my head. There are photos of that, and I don't want them ever to get out. Locker did the same thing, and I was amazed by it. But the team would not let us leave without doing it. The team would not let us leave without doing it, and that was something that was extremely special.
Well, I will close this down with this, and Alan brought it up last year after they won the Cup, and we had to tape all these different segments for our social media, different outlets, and he said, guys get traded a lot, and you play for a number of different teams, and you wear a lot of different sweaters, but there's always one team that gets in your blood, and it gets in your bones, and it becomes part of who you are, and I know for Alan, he's played on a number of teams, but the Caps are in his blood and in his bones, and it's important to him. I didn't grow up here, but having been a part of this now and being a part of this fan base and watching what it meant to so many people, it's in my blood now, and I get what you're saying. And that run was the most fun I've ever had professionally. And thank you guys for making it so much fun for us, and thanks to the Caps for making it so much fun for us. So as I said earlier, I'm not booking a vacation until July. So there it is. Let's do this again next April, May, and June, and I think we'll all sign up for that right now.
I'm in.
So, absolutely.
So thank you so much to Penn Commons for putting us up tonight. We'll do this again. Thanks to Ryan Billy and J.J. Regan and Joe Beninati and Alan May, who fought through traffic to get here and finally did, and he was the headliner, no doubt about it, tonight. Thanks to all of you guys for coming out here and being a part of it, and I guess the next time you'll hear from us, there'll be a banner raised at Capital One Arena. That sounds pretty good. Thanks, guys.